It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Do we lie together? Reaching out with hope. Encouraging one another. Each step along the road. You and I can make everything a little better. Doing life together.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the Relationship Doctor, and I'm here today with a very special guest. And I want you to stay tuned because we're going to be talking about something that is going to be something that you've dealt with in your life and your neighbors are dealing with and your friends and everybody that you know. If you know somebody who might benefit from this show, you might want to give them a call and say, listen, we're going to talk about something that affects all of us. Hopefully I've got your interest right there. I'm going to get right to it and introduce our special guest. Today we have in the studio Dr. Kristen Hark, who has a PhD in interpersonal communication. I know a little bit about that, Kristen. I have a master's in interpersonal communication, but not a doctorate like you do. And you've done some great work that we're going to talk about. Kristen is a mom of little Israel Grace. And I was surprised to learn that Israel is a girl's name. So tell us a little bit about how you got that name for your child.
Well, first was the meaning of Israel, which when we looked it up, we were just astounded. The fact that it means overcoming all things with God.
Wow.
And so we thought, what better gift you can give? So her name is Israel Grace. We call her Izzy G is her hip-hop name. So she is 10 months old, so she's not quite
ready for hip-hop. Although I don't know, you could put her on YouTube and probably be an overnight sensation the way these things work, right? Well, you did a dissertation called Disconnect. Expectations and Experiencing Intimate Interpersonal Relationship. We're talking about the work that you've done in the area of intimate communication and communication that we deal with in everyday life.
Exactly. And I think one of the biggest things is the fact that what people expect to experience and then what they actually experience, it's just very different. So I think it bears looking at, why is that? Why don't we actually have realistic expectations? Why aren't we living up to it? That kind of thing.
Today we wanted to talk about something that you've written a lot about. And in fact, this was part of your dissertation, I believe. And that is what we call the hookup generation. Define what that is, but in case you've never heard that term hookup, what are we talking about?
The hookup generation is a colloquial phrase that we're going to use for sleeping with random people. We could say sleeping around, something like that. But what we found is that it's interesting to look at, if we call it hooking up, it can mean a variety of things. And that's why that phrase is so important to people, because it can mean really just hanging out, but it could also mean random sexual encounters, and then everything in between.
So if somebody says that they were hooking up with somebody, are they talking that they're having a sexual experience with somebody, or is it just a more generic phrase than that?
No, most of the time they're referring to some sexual behavior, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the actual act of intercourse. But by saying that, it allows people to feel better about their behavior. In the study I was doing in my dissertation, I talked to female students and they were college age, and the hookup culture is rampant in that age. From parties, meeting people, to sexual encounters that they didn't plan, to ones that they planned with people that they didn't know yet. Very interesting, but I think it's important to understand that the way they communicate about it has changed and absolves them of responsibility. The new phrase, the Netflix and chill, it's one of those things, what are you doing this weekend? Just Netflix and chill. And that sounds like something legitimate. But
sounds
now,
like you're watching a movie and you're chilling out.
Exactly.
That's not what they
or
mean.
Or we're going to binge watch Downton Abbey or West Wing. But instead, it now is also a colloquial phrase for the fact that I'm going to be sleeping with someone or having sexual relationship with someone that I don't know well.
It seems to me when I watch any television these days, I mean any television show, it doesn't matter what the show is, it's like there's an expectation on people that you need to be sleeping with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about casual sex, or if you feel good, this is what you do. We were trying to count the other day, my husband and I were watching television shows. I said, let's find one example in a television show of where the person is actually married and having sex. And we could only find one in an entire week. And I was really taken aback.
It's sort of interesting how we look at that. It's sort of a no-no. And I don't know why, but we don't portray sex as part of the marital act. It's almost as if we want to separate it out so that it doesn't need that covenant relationship behind it. It ties to the idea of less responsibility for your actions.
Is the media trying to push this idea that sex should just be fun? It should be something that you do for enjoyment and no more, and don't think too much about it?
I think it is. And I honestly think it comes from a couple of different reasons. One specifically, that because we're such an individualistic culture, it tends to be all about me and what I want and what makes me happy to the expense of everyone else. And that plays out in a number of different ways. But staying with this, it's, well, if you don't make me happy any longer, then I'm going to find someone else and move on. But I honestly think, too, that a lot of it is the media might portray it that way. But I also think that it's not happening as frequently as we think. But because we think it's happening, we then portray it. So it's sort of like that self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense.
And I guess I wonder, does the average person walking around, does it shape their ideas about something like cohabitations? What's the connection between the hookup idea and cohabitation, where people are living together at record rates?
Right. I would say, one, it's extremely tightly connected. For instance, the idea of the hookup culture, the Netflix and chill kind of thing, that implies frequency and a short duration of a relationship. That in turn doesn't keep marriage in a sense sacred, part of that sexual bond of marriage. So then it moves into cohabitation because that also is easier to do more frequently with shorter duration. So it's sort of a stepping stone, I would say, that then makes cohabitation more palatable than really tying someone down. Because what if I'm not happy? Or what if you don't fulfill me? Then it's easier for me to take care of me that way.
To make a point of that, there was a survey in USA Today where they looked at more than two-thirds of married couples in the United States now say that they lived together before marriage. And the number of unmarried opposite-sex household is rising dramatically.
It is, and that changes the whole dynamic of a family.
Yeah.
Because then you have children being raised by non-blood relatives who are cohabiting with maybe a blood relative parent, but possibly not. You have not only step families, but then you have boyfriends, girlfriends, and that opens the door to all kinds of problems with the family dynamic.
It's important for those of us who are listening to this to really understand that this is a shift in American culture where even in my lifetime, I can think that the idea of sleeping with someone, when I was in high school, you were, quote, the slut who did that.
Right.
You were not given very nice names. And now it's this expectation that, of course, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I just go out and do that with somebody? And even in one of the television shows that we watched, the issue there was that all of her friends were looking at her and going, you haven't had sex in 3 days. What's wrong with you? What's going on? Why haven't you found somebody to just hook up with and be with?
It's funny because they tie it to a sense of personal accomplishment or fulfillment. And I think the focus is on ourself. It's on me rather than the other person. I think you're exactly right. The consequences are far more vast than what we think right now.
I get real concerned that the message to women is that somehow you are more empowered if you take charge of your sexuality and you decide that you're going to do this with men. But the result of that isn't any different than if you were in charge or not in charge. You're still having this relationship outside of marriage, which has significant consequences. Even the secular people, there's a wonderful biological anthropologist named Helen Fisher who talks about the fact that casual sex is really not possible because of what happens neurochemically in the body and the way the hormones impact. We're going to talk about this whole notion of casual sex, of hooking up and cohabitation. We're going to get into the consequences of this, so stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you want to learn more about lasting relationships, visit Dr. Linda Mental's Facebook, Dr. Linda Mental, author and speaker.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
What do Thomas Jefferson, Agatha Christie, Pope John Paul II, and Princess Diana have in common? Well, these notable individuals and many others, past and present, share the habit of journaling. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda, the relationship doctor, and I've got some tips for you on the value of journaling. Whether you're just writing down a few thoughts or pouring out your heart on paper, journaling has some real benefits, like getting a handle on your emotions or a better understanding of other people or even organizing your priorities. Sometimes reading your older journal notes will help you appreciate the sweet little details of life you enjoyed but maybe have forgotten. One of the best benefits of journaling comes when you look back and you see how the Lord has been there in all your circumstances, directing your steps and taking care of the things that matter to you. If you've not considered journaling before, give it a try and see which of those benefits journaling might bring your way. Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm here today with a special guest, Dr. Kristen Hark, who has written often on interpersonal communications. That's what her PhD is in, and she's particularly written on the idea of what is called hookup in our culture and cohabitation. Kristen, before we talk a little bit more about the consequences of hooking up and cohabitating with people, let's go back to what's changed in American culture in terms of marriage. How has marriage shifted and changed and fed into this problem of more hookups?
To me, that's the fascinating part, because the age is changing so much. Right now, in the 2000s, the average age for men and women to marry is at a historic high, but it's actually still rising. So for women, the current age is 27, and for men, the current age is 29. You compare that to the 30s and 40s, where it was 20 and 21, respectively, and then you change it to the 60s, where it was 21 and 22, respectively. This is a huge shift. I think that makes a big difference. And I think that ties back to what I mentioned earlier, the idea of individualism, thinking about themselves, taking care of themselves. And I think there's a lot of different reasons for that. But my honest opinion, women are more independent of men now. They're able to wait longer to marry. They're able to opt to wait to marry, opt to start a family. Mm-hmm. And so certain things have helped that.
Some women like to wait until they're through their careers, and so they've established themselves before they get married. What's interesting about that is that as the age gets longer, you know, when it goes from, let's say, 17, 18 to later in their 20s, this is the very time where sexuality is peaking and where you have all these biological urges and desires.
Right.
And I remember reading an article, I think it was in 2009, that Christianity Today did a great article on the case for early marriage. And one of the issues that they made about that was that we're telling these kids to wait, wait, and wait. And yet they've got raging hormones, and they're in this culture that is sexually saturated. They're hearing these messages all the time of hooking up and cohabitating, and then they're getting married later. Maybe we should be helping them with their sexual purity by helping people get married at an earlier age so that they don't have this huge period of time where they're struggling with their sexuality, trying to figure out, how do I keep this all under control?
And that's an excellent point, especially when you think about the idea that marriage used to be something that was done earlier.
Right.
It was the cornerstone of your adult life that then you built everything on top of that. So you built a family, you built a career, and your family was with you. Your spouse was with you for all of that journey. Where now it's almost become this capstone, this ending to, I've arrived. I'm financially stable. I've got the career that I've wanted. And so now it's time for me to find someone to share myself with. And so it becomes this capstone rather than cornerstone. And I think that's a huge shift in what we find to be important.
It feeds into that idea you're talking about with the individualism. Again, it's all about me. I have to get myself together. I think that's one of the biggest changes I've seen in doing counseling and therapy with people. I have to get myself together before then I can be with another person. And I'm thinking, well, one of the ways that you learn to be who you are is in relationship with somebody else.
Exactly.
You can do life with somebody else and grow and change. And in fact, that other person is often a good reflection of what your issues are as you're having to accommodate someone else in your life.
Foundationally, that's super important. When you think about the idea that our own reality is shaped socially.
Yeah.
It's constructed with other people in relationship, in conversation, especially those intimate conversations. I'm figuring out who I am because I'm sharpened by other people.
Yeah.
If I'm all about me, my focus of attention is myself, not the other person, not the consequences of what my random sexual behavior might do to another person. I call it the tyranny of choice. Having too many choices, we just choose over and over again, and it's essentially a merry-go-round that we get on that we don't get off.
One of the things that I've read about is that so many people are cohabitating because they're really afraid of the potential of divorce. And I have to say, my generation is responsible for this whole generation of children of divorce. So these children of divorce are going, well, I didn't see my parents do this very well. It didn't work out for them. maybe I need to try out this person mm-hmm. before. But how has that worked out in reality?
You're two-thirds more likely to get a divorce if you've cohabitated.
See, now, why do people listen to that and think this isn't really a trial thing that's going to work out well?
Right. We use trials for everything else. I've even heard of people literally living in a house for a week before they buy it, throwing parties in a house before they buy it to see
if what it's like.
Entertaining space is like, and all of these things. Trial periods in jobs, trying something for a trial period, send it back, money back guarantee. In a sense, it's prescribed to us, becomes habit. I think that's part of it for sure.
The take-home message for people listening right now is that it does not improve your chances in marriage, and in fact, it has the opposite effect. Does telling people that stop the behavior?
They think they're the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. To me, that ties back into the individualism and the idea that it's about me. We're not as self-aware as we think we are. How yeah. these things impact us, how the relationships are changing our expectations for the next person. You mentioned some of the television shows and yeah. expectations there for relationships, you know, Hollywood-esque. And very different from what most of us experience in reality.
They don't show the consequences, and that's what's upsetting to me. Married couples are more often willing to work out their differences before they walk out of a relationship. One of the things that I think about is if you don't have that commitment of marriage, it's so easy to leave. And I hear people saying, well, we're living together because then I can just walk out anytime and I can leave quickly mm-hmm. if I need to leave.
But they're always thinking about themselves. They don't want the other person to do that. They want the other person to be committed while they're able to leave.
Do people make more money when they live together?
No, most of the time, married women are at a much higher socioeconomic status if they're married.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most of the time, they're worried about themselves first, putting off marriage so that they are financially stable. But while delayed marriage and waiting until they're 27 and men are 29 helps bring down the divorce rate, it's actually only because less people are marrying.
Yeah, so we have more in the cohabitation status, right?
So while it might seem like the wealth raises and the income levels rise, they're actually not. It's that some of the other factors are changing so that it's, I think, a misnomer to look at it like that.
Yeah, and I know for a lot of single women who are living with boyfriends, their economic state is worse than women who are mm-hmm. married. And then we have the whole issue of abuse. And I know there was a study conducted in the U.S. Center for Disease Control that found that marital status was the strongest predictor of abuse. It was ahead of race, age, education, and housing conditions. Women who were in these cohabiting relationships were more likely than people who were married to mm-hmm. be abused. We're talking about more likely to be divorced, more likely to be abused, and more likely to have a bad economic result.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're even thinking about some of the personal standards, like personal experience of depression.
Yeah.
Not understanding that someone's committed. Just think about some of those foundational things that make us commit to a relationship. They're not there.
They're not there.
Right.
And to that point, there was a study in Alabama Policy Institute that found that specifically couples who cohabitate before marriage tend to be more depressed, more dependent. You know, we want our independence by
doing this,
but we find they're more dependent and are more likely to believe their relationship will end mm-hmm. as compared with married couples who did not cohabitate. The statistics just don't look good.
No.
Is there any upside to this at all that you can even see?
The upside is people are becoming unhappy and they're starting to ask the question, why? I use the example of the movie, He's Just Not That Into You,
yeah,
quite a bit, because it sort of lays out these several different relationships and how the women are navigating those. I would say people are starting to ask why, and I think that's step one, being able to stop focusing on self and start asking why and how can this be better.
We're going to continue our conversation on hooking up and cohabitation with Dr. Kristen Hark. We'll have more in just a moment, back after the break. Are you a mom or a dad trying to do your best to raise a healthy weight child in an unhealthy eating culture? Do you often struggle with how to respond when your child asks if she is fat or if he needs to lose weight? Do you wonder what is normal and how do I best impact my child and his or her eating habits? Well, hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and my book, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, teaches parents how to raise healthy kids in an overscheduled, fast food, video game world by making simple choices, easy changes, and instilling good habits that will improve everyone's life today and forever. Winner of the Mom's Choice Award, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, will give you this confidence the confidence you need to take charge of your child's eating and raise a healthy weight child.
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World. Available on Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com, and available online where books are sold.
Hey, it's Chris Weigel here. If you missed the Dr. Linda Mental Show, you can catch up by reading her blogs or listening to her podcast on the MyFaithRadio.com website.
You are listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, where today I have a very special guest, Dr. Kristen Hark, and we're talking about the hookup culture and the cohabitation that is so common as more and more people are somewhat afraid of divorce, and we've got a very casual atmosphere in our culture about sex, and certainly we're in a sex-saturated society where that seems to be the only thing that people define themselves by these days. Let's talk a little bit in this last part of our show, Kristen, about how do we talk about this with people? I know that my kids went to a Christian school, and they have friends now. They're in their 20s, and they're saying, oh, yeah, he's a Christian, but he's living with his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you talk about that? He goes, oh, we don't really talk about it. Just doing what they need to do. I don't want to judge them. That's what I hear a lot, is I don't want to judge them. How do we talk about this?
Well, I think that's a huge problem. We live in such a postmodern moment with so many different narratives and stories, little t truths and no absolute capital T truth. So I really think, especially in the church, it's important to talk about the way that we see things as a lens. We have a Christian worldview, a biblical worldview, then I absolutely have a foundation to stand on. I look at marriage or relationships, sex, communicating about relationships through that biblical worldview. Then I think of things like, how do I handle 1 Corinthians 13 if I'm casually hooking up with random people? They cannot align. So I think that's one of the first things. But honestly, as common sense as it sounds, people need to talk about it. I think too many young women and young men are participating in behavior that they actually don't want to participate in, but they think everyone else is doing it. They're not vocal about what they think or what bothers them, hurts them, makes them scared or afraid. So they just end up following through in the behavior rather than thinking about it.
I think that is so important because when you get a group of girls together and you start talking about their sexual experiences, it is not the Hollywood experience that everybody's talking about. And I see the fallout of that. A hookup cannot really ever be casual because of the hormones and what's happening with these bonding hormones that we all have. I'll hear people say, I did a lot of hooking up and things before I got married, and then I found myself in my marriage having flashbacks of other relationships that I had or comparing that person to that other person, and I can't seem to get those images out of my head.
Right. We're not reflective about our own behavior and what we're doing. We have a tendency to be very short-sighted, and so we do the trial periods. Everything's a drive-through. We want fast. We want it instantaneous, and so relationships are becoming the same way. Because we're not prioritizing, we're not looking long-term, we're thinking short-term, it's messing up those long-term priorities. So then when they are married and they are taking a step in the right direction and raising a family, they're dealing with a lot more baggage.
Yeah, because there isn't a whole lot of talk about the consequences. So we want also to really understand that if you are trying to do things in God's way now, there certainly is grace, there's forgiveness. Once you pray, God takes those things away and he blots them out completely. That's the good news. You don't have to live with this type of guilt. But sometimes the memories of those things are still there and they're difficult to work through and the consequences are real. We're talking about being very counterculture with the Christian culture. When you open the scriptures, and you read a word like fornication, which does anybody even use that word? I don't even know if anybody knows what that is. We could do a Jay Leno thing on that or a Jim. Right. It's go out in the street like a Jimmy Kimmel thing and say, what does the word fornication mean? And I bet you people wouldn't even know.
Right. Yeah.
But the Bible is really clear about this sexuality stuff, isn't it?
It is. It's extremely clear. And to be honest, I think that's what turns people away.
Yeah.
No one wants a clear right or wrong. We want that ability to do what feels good in the moment. And we have that penchant for self-expression. We have this sort of therapeutic mindset that that doesn't make me feel good, so I'm not going to do that, or it's not about the other person. And so I think, unfortunately, we've lost that sense of there being a right and a wrong, mm-hmm. and there being virtues. The fact that I should want to do right action. I should want to be the best sort of person that I can be as a Christian. And because I have that worldview, because I have that foundation, then my behavior should come out of that. But if there's no foundation, then in a sense, I don't know what they're working from other than that sort of postmodern moment.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the way God designed us and the way that mm-hmm. he set up the laws, what we would say in terms of the way we're supposed to behave. Mm-hmm. He did that so we could flourish. Mm-hmm. It isn't that we have a bunch of rules that say don't do this and don't do this and don't be acting out this way sexually with people. But it's because he knows how we're designed. Mm-hmm. And he knows that when we engage in these behaviors, we don't flourish in the way that he wants us to. So this is really his word. And the guidance of his word is a way to set it up for each of us mm-hmm. to really flourish.
Right. It brings it back to trusting that we have a good father.
Yeah.
If we trust that he has our best interests at heart, we could relax. We could follow his rules, follow those guidelines because he knows what he has for us. But instead, I think it really comes down to the element that we don't trust anyone and we trust ourselves to take care of things. And to me, that's almost the saddest part of it all, that if we could trust that God has good things for us, it would be so much easier to convince people.
Well, that's a good word. That's a good place for us to end our conversation, because I was thinking when you were talking about how we're so me, what's good for me, how what I want to do, and we become our own gods. I was thinking about the kings. They did what was right in their own mind.
Yep.
King after king, they just did what they thought was right, and they ignore God. Maybe the takeaway message that we have from this is that when we don't ignore God, and we look at his word, and we look at his principles for living, and we have this view of what would be a healthy sexuality, and certainly sex in the context of marriage is a sacred thing. Marriage is a sacred thing. And we've got beautiful descriptions of that in Song of Solomon and other places in the Bible. And then believing, as Dr. Hark has told us, that God has a plan for us to flourish when we're obedient and we use his word. That's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, our engineer, Caleb Carpenter, our post-producer, Chris Underation, and thanks, of course, to you, Kristen Hark, my very special guest, and your insights that you brought into what can be a very difficult conversation when we're talking about the whole area of sexuality. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mental Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.